This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Sports Report for Monday, May 13, 2024. Jay Cooper here reporting from the USA Today Sports section. We have a Bob Nightingale's column on baseball talking about Chris Davis, former Chicago Cubs star, and we'll read about what he's up to lately. The Mavericks move is paying off. Jeff Zilgit has a column on the front page regarding the Dallas Mavericks and what they're doing in the NBA playoffs. Also ahead is a man is facing jail time for stealing statue of a baseball icon. And we also have news in the world of the Triple Crown. Got some Triple Crown news to report on and maybe some other racing news, motorsports variety. But first off, cover story brings us to Chris Davis turns swing mechanics into car mechanics. This is by Bob Nightingale, USA Today Sports, Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona. He once was one of the most feared power hitters in the game, hitting more home runs in a three-year span than any other player in Major League Baseball. Today, he hopes to be one of the most trusted mechanics working under the hood of your car. Chris Davis, who hit 40 or more home runs with at least 100 RBI three consecutive years with the Oakland Athletics, leading the majors in homers with 48 in 2018, no longer spends his days playing baseball, where he earned more than $60 million in his career. These days, you can find him working on cars, changing oil and filters, fixing flat tires, and perhaps one day being able to replace gear ratios and fuel systems. There was no more opportunity for me in baseball, Davis tells USA Today Sports, so it took a lot of searching of who I was outside of baseball. I'm still young. I didn't want to just sit at home. So Davis decided to follow his passion, cars. Davis, 36, attended the Arizona Automotive Institute for a year, graduated a few weeks ago, and soon will be applying to car dealerships and mom-and-pop shops as a mechanic. It was a challenge because I didn't even know how to change a tire before going to school, Davis says over lunch. I loved cars, but didn't know what to expect. I knew I was going to be behind. I just dedicated myself to it. So there he went from 7 a.m. to 1 o'clock, 5 days a week, learning all about the inner workings of being a car mechanic. The class opened with 15 students, and by the end, there were just four who graduated. I was like the old guy trying to stay young and hang around, Davis said, laughing. The other guys were 19, 20-year-old kids who had been working on cars since they were five. They weren't even old enough to drink, but it was a lot of fun. It was comforting to learn about cars. It had that nostalgia feel to it because I really got into cars when I was like 13 and I saw Fast and Furious. That movie was epic. I just wanted to be part of that scene where you just have like car friends and guys hang out at shows and races. There's something to be said about having a nice car. Davis's first car was a 1978 Cadillac from his grandfather. But these days, he has five cars in his six-car garage with a 61 Chevy Impala, a 2019 Shelby Mustang, a Dodge Viper GTS, a Ford Raptor, and a Range Rover. So now I'm changing my own oil, tinkering with my 61 Impala. Everything, Davis says. That's my little project right now, but I just like hanging out in my garage, really. I'm going to get a job after the summer and when family vacations are over. I'll be an entry-level tech doing tires, oils, and lubes, everything. I'd love one day to do tune-ups on street racing cars, customization, restoration, just to be part of a club and to go to car shows and just enjoy that scene. Davis married Jill with 6-year-old Pablo and 4-year-old Phoenix religiously watches car shows each night with the family. He attends the Barrett-Jackson auction in Scottsdale each year with former teammate and car enthusiast Marco Estrada. He subscribes to enough car magazines to start his own library. The passion has become a family affair. That's when he's driving with his sons, they'll reel off the name of the cars they see on the road. He's an avid car enthusiast, just like Hall of Famer Reggie Jackson. So the way Davis figures it, why not get paid for something you love? He made himself the best home run hitter in the game and now plans to make himself the best automotive mechanic in the city. I'm happy for him. Sounds like me, a fellow gearhead, Jackson, who once owned 157 cars, told USA Today Sports. As a mechanic, you develop the skills you need to buy and restore cars, too. You read, you buy books, and you hang around guys in the hobby. He's in the right place. It's a great hobby, and it's a love. You learn to do things yourself. My hobby became a business. You learn how to buy the right car. You improve your skills with knowledge. Jackson and Davis met briefly before a wild card game against the New York Yankees in 2018, with the two 40 home run hitters exchanging pleasantries but never discussing cars. I just appreciated that he was smaller than I thought, Davis said. He was a smaller home run hitter because that's who I was like. I'm not Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton. I'm kind of like a short home run hitter, 5'11". Jackson hit his way into the Hall of Fame with 563 home runs, but only twice did he ever hit 40 homers in his 21-year career. For him to do that three straight years is pretty remarkable, Jackson said. Davis hit 205 home runs in his first six full seasons, but hip, quadriceps, and wrist injuries took a toll, and he didn't play another major league game after the 2021 season. He signed with the Diablos Rojos del Mexico of the Mexican League in 2022 and finished the season playing for the Wild Health Genomes of the independent Atlantic League. His baseball career was over, but even after playing 8 years for the Brewers, Oakland, and Texas, winning the 2018 home run title and finishing eighth in the American League MVP race and earning $67.5 million, he's not quite ready to say goodbye forever to the sport. Davis finished with 8 years, 39 days of Major League service, and one day would love to be a Major League coach, get on the pension program, and accrue the remaining 1 year, 133 days of service time to be fully vested 10-year player. Ideally, that would be a nice way to close out the chapter, Davis says. It would meet my goal of playing in the big leagues for 10 years. It just feels incomplete because I didn't reach my goal. It would be cool to finish out like that. Davis would love to make an impact with the younger players, just like Ricky Weeks did for him during his career, making sure he was comfortable playing video games and talking baseball on the road, and even buying him his first suit. But for now, well, there's a few cars that he needs to nurture. I wanted to find myself outside baseball, Davis says, and now I have. I wonder about guys that have less time than me and are going through this. I never really talked to anybody about it. It's tough when you're done playing, but I can't wait to get started. Here are the tales of two others. From the outfield to the kitchen. Outfielder Jason Conte, unlike Chris Davis, never was a home run hitter and never made big money in baseball. He played parts of five seasons, winning a World Series ring with the 2001 Arizona Diamondbacks, playing a total of just 182 games while hitting .238 and six homers. He finished his career in 2006 playing for the AAA Memphis, Tennessee, AAA Columbus, and finally with the independent Camden River Sharks before going overseas one last season in Italy for the Bologna Italeri. He thought he wanted to be a lawyer after he retired, but then turned to his passion, cooking. Just cooking for the wife in the off-season, Conte, 49, told USA Today Sports, was something I liked doing. I cooked 4 to 5 nights a week, just trying different things. I didn't know it would become a profession at that time. It's not like I went to culinary school, worked in a kitchen or anything. I just watched a lot of cooking shows. Conti, who began his culinary career bussing tables at Outback Steakhouse and then cooking at Roy's Hawaiian Fusion and the Americana restaurants in the Phoenix area, is now the executive chef at the Craftsman Cocktails and Kitchen in Tempe, Arizona. Conti will cook you a mean dish of lasagna, bolognese from scratch, lemon swordfish, or some Cajun or Thai dishes. He comes in 5 days a week at 2 o'clock to prepare, leaves at 10, after cleaning up, and does it all again the next day. There's pressure in the kitchen, to be sure. The summers can be rough with the 6-burner grill and a fryer going, but hey, it's nothing like being on the ball field. You can't get out 3 good plates out of 10 to be successful. You better have it right, all 10 dishes, Conti says. You can't put out average food, but I'll take that pressure over baseball. I remember 30,000 Red Sox fans screaming in my ear at Fenway. I was scared out of my mind playing in Oakland 1 year when someone threw a squid 20 feet from me. A squid. Hey, all I'm doing is cooking for people. And from the pitcher mound to the pen, Steve Trout, 66, hasn't thrown a pitch in the big leagues since 1989, but he's using his left hand for something that's more inspirational to him than the 88 games he won in his 12-year career. He's writing books, motivational, children's, fictional, biographical. I'm having a lot of fun, says Trout, who spends time living everywhere these days, from Chicago to Australia to Bangkok to Panama, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. I remember my brother, Paul, a writer, told me, "You write well. Don't worry about punctuations. People can fix that. Write what you feel." So I've written about life in the perspective of a ball player. He has written about parents yelling at umpires and their kids in Little League. He has written about the cutthroat agent business in baseball. He has written about bullying. He has written about his own life. He has written a fictional account about the first transgender baseball player in professional baseball. They say writing is cathartic when you go through a breakup, Trout says. Well, I broke up with baseball. This is my way of talking about everything through the pen. This is about helping others. I don't write to be successful. I write to express my feelings. And another story, heartbreaking. It was a brutal 24 hours in Southern California where legendary scout Barry Axelrod, 77, and former prize baseball prodigy Sean Burroughs unexpectedly died in San Diego and Long Beach, respectively. Axelrod, who represented some of the biggest stars in the game, Hall of Famers and All-Stars, lived life to the fullest. If you were ever around the man, you were in for a good time. He was fiercely loyal. He was one of those guys who was always a gentleman and just made the business better by being in it, veteran agent Barry Meister said. You know what kind of guy he was just by looking at his client base? He represented guys in his own image, leaders and examples of what a major leaguer should be. He was an icon. Axelrod was scheduled to have his regular weekly lunch with his closest friends Thursday when he died. If you judge by the people you hang out with and look at his list of friends, Phil Nevin said, Barry is as great a friend as I know. This hurts. Burroughs led Long Beach to consecutive Little League World Series championships in 92 and 93, was a 2000 Olympic gold medalist, and a 1998 first-round pick of the Padres, spent part of 7 years in the majors, and faced years of substance abuse problems. He turned his life around and was working as a firefighter, security guard, a grocery store clerk, and driving for Uber at night to take care of his 6-year-old son, Knox. He was in the parking lot at Stearns Champion Park, the same place where he played as a Little League World Series hero, dropping Knox off before his game when he collapsed and died from cardiac arrest. He was a Long Beach legend, Long Beach Little League President Doug Whitman said. And the final chunk of Bob's column is actually pretty lengthy, so I'm going to switch gears here. The other front page story in the USA Today Sports, Mavericks moves pay off. It's by Jeff Zilgit. If you regrade this season's NBA trade deadline deals, the Dallas Mavericks receive an A. Where is Mavericks President of Basketball Operations and GM Nico Harrison's name on the NBA Executive of the Year list? He finished fifth, behind winner Brad Stevens of Boston, Sam Presti of Oklahoma City, Tim Connelly of Minnesota, and Leon Rose of the New York Knicks. Harrison, a former Nike exec who joined the Mavs in 2021, made trade deadline deals that made them a contender. Dallas acquired P.J. Washington from Charlotte and Daniel Gafford from Washington, adding offense and defense. Combine that with Dallas signing Kyrie Irving, Josh Green, and Derek Jones Jr. to deals in the offseason, drafting productive rookie Derek Lively II with the number 12 pick in the 2023 draft, and signing head coach Jason Kidd to an extension last week, and Harrison has had a fantastic year. His and the Mavericks' season can get even better with two more victories in their Western Conference semifinals series against the top-seeded Oklahoma City Thunder. The Mavericks took a 2-1 series lead with a 105-101 victory in Game 3 Saturday and are showing there every bit a contender in the West as Oklahoma, Minnesota, and Denver. Luka Doncic's steal and layup gave the Mavs a 102-97 lead with 2:11 remaining in the fourth quarter, and Irving, one of the game's premier shotmakers and ball handlers, beat Oklahoma's Jalen Williams off the dribble and dropped in a left-handed six-footer, putting Dallas up 104-99 with 40 seconds to go. The victory puts the Mavs in position to win Game 4 at home Monday, that's tonight, at 9:30 Eastern on TNT, and take a 3-1 series lead. Regardless of how the series plays out, the Mavs have demonstrated they can be part of the best of the West, not only this season, but the next couple of seasons. And we're going to jump now to the man facing 19 years for theft. This is by Scooby As Axon, Scooby Axon, A-X-S-O-N, a man pleaded guilty to helping steal a bronze statue of Jackie Robinson from a Wichita, Kansas park. Ricky Alderette, 45, was charged in February with felony theft, valued at over $25,000, aggravated criminal damage, identity theft, and making false information. He will be formally sentenced on July 1 after pleading guilty to aggravated burglary, aggravated criminal damage to property, interference with law enforcement, criminal damage to property, theft, making a false writing, and identity theft. A district judge told Alderette the maximum sentence is 229 months. That's over 19 years. Alderette will also have to pay $41,500 to the league 42, a youth baseball league named for the Hall of Famer's uniform number. The 275-pound statue was taken from McAdams Park in Wichita on January 25, and only its feet were left after thieves dismantled it. Alderette admitted to being part of a crew that stole the statue from the park and put it in a pickup truck. 5 days later, the Wichita Fire Department, responding to a fire call, found parts of the statue in a trash can. Authorities said there was no evidence of a hate crime, but the motive was to sell the metal for scrap. A new statue was scheduled to be installed in August after Major League Baseball and its 30 teams said they will help replace it. So, justice to the clown who stole Jackie Robinson's statue. And we have the Mystic Dan said our loner said that horse is headed to the Preakness Stakes. This is by Jason Frakes. Dateline Louisville. After a week of deliberation, trainer Kenny McPeak made it official. Kentucky Derby winner Mystic Dan will head to the Preakness Stakes to compete in the second leg of the Triple Crown. The horse is doing fantastic, McPeak said Saturday after Mystic Dan galloped 11.2 miles on a cool 11/2 miles. I don't know what that means. Anyway, he galloped on a cool and cloudy morning at Churchill Downs. McPeak had Mystic Dan go through routine scopes and blood work and was satisfied enough to commit to Saturday's $2 million Preakness Stakes at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore. McPeak said Mystic Dan would ship to Baltimore on Sunday, which was yesterday. The Preakness draw was set for 5:30 tonight. After beating Sierra Leone by a nose in the 150th running of the Derby, Mystic Dan got 3 days off before returning to the track Wednesday. McPeak said Mystic Dan will maintain a schedule of jogs and breezes until the Preakness. "He won't breeze going into the Preakness," McPeak said. "You don't need a breeze. He just ran." If anybody knows what a breeze is, you can let me know. While Brian Hernandez Jr. will have the mount in the Preakness, retired jockey Robbie Alvarado has been riding Mystic Dan in the mornings and continued to do so over the weekend. Alvarado and McPeak teamed to win the Preakness in 2020 with the filly Swiss Skydiver. "Kenny gave me a call and said, 'Rob, I need you at Pimlico,'" Alvarado said. "Me and Kenny have had a little luck there. We're trying to do this whole Swiss Skydiver thing over again. This will be the only time I'll be riding him this year, but we got just as good a rider, Brian, on him." Added McPeak, "Robbie knows this horse as well as anybody. I think he gets along with him the best." Mystic Dan is one of three horses who raced in the Kentucky Derby being considered for the Preakness. Trainer D. Wayne Lucas has committed to the running Just Steel, 17th in the Derby, in the second leg of the Triple Crown. Trainer Brad Cox is still weighing his options with Catching Freedom, who is fourth in the Derby. There are seven new shooters in consideration for the Preakness, led by Bob Baffert-trained pair of Arkansas Derby winner Muth and Santa Anita Derby runner-up Imagination. Muth figures to be the morning line favorite for the Preakness after his two-length victory over Just Steel in the Arkansas Derby on March 30. That was at Oakland Park. Mystic Dan finished third in that race, 61 lengths. Behind Muth, it doesn't sound right. 61/4 lengths. I don't know. Again, looks like some horse racing code. Not sure what that means. But 61/4 lengths behind Muth. McPeak said Mystic Dan's outside post position, ninth in a field of 10, was probably what got him beat more than anything. He really got hung out there, and then he got bumped pretty good. McPeak is hoping for a cleaner trip for the rematch with Muth in Baltimore. "He was ready for the Arkansas Derby," McPeak said Saturday. "I'm not going to use that as an excuse. He did get turned sideways in that turn, and Brian felt like that cost him 3 or 4 lengths. The horse fought back. Fortunately, I'm optimistic maybe we could give Muth another run." And runner-up jockey fined for touching rival in Derby. This is also by Jason Frakes, F-R-A-K-E-S. Dateline Louisville jockey Tyler Gaffalione was fined $2,500 for his ride on Sierra Leone during the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs. The Kentucky Horse Racing Commission announced the fine after ordering Gaffalione to attend film review of the race on Thursday. He was fined for touching a rival with his left hand nearing the finish, according to a news release. He has 30 days to pay the fine. Gaffalione guided Sierra Leone to a late-running second-place finish on May 4 in the Derby, and nosed behind Mystic Dan. Sierra Leone beat Japan-bred Forever Young by a nose for second place. Gaffalione and Sarah Sierra Leone, engaged Forever Young and jockey Rusie Sakai in a physical battle while trying to catch Mystic Dan in the final furlong of the race. The horses made contact several times, and a photo appears to show Gaffalione making contact with Forever Young with his left hand. "He wanted to lean in today and made it a little difficult," Gaffalione said after the race. "I had a hard time keeping him straight, and that definitely cost us. He gives you everything, very responsive, but he loses concentration." Sakai didn't claim foul after the race. Churchill Downs stewards didn't post an inquiry sign after the Kentucky Derby. Gaffalione has been named to ride Tuscan Gold in Saturday's Preakness Stakes in Baltimore. And we also have some other racing news, this of the motorsports variety. Palou again dominates on the IMS road course. Dateline Indianapolis, assist by Nathan Brown. It wasn't his 16.8-second thumping of the field from a year ago that sparked a five-race run that included four victories and an Indy 500 pole. But Alex Palou looked no less unstoppable in the Suncio Grand Prix of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway road course. After a late-race restart with 17 laps to go Saturday, the Chip Ganassi racing driver drove away from the field for a 6.5-second pad by the checkered flag, securing his first points-paying victory of 2024 and second overall race win to take a 12-point lead in the championship as part of his early title defense. Here's how he did it. Palou's race-winning move, in essence, came off the racing surface in his second of three pit stops of the day. Just short of the halfway point, the pole sitter was running in third place behind the pair of drivers who started just behind him as the green flag fell Saturday. Christian Lundgaard, who qualified second and snatched the lead from Palou three turns into the 85-lap race, held a 1.4-second cushion on Will Power, who started third, by lap 36 as the leaders began thinking about making their second stops. As the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan racing driver crept up onto nearly lapped traffic, Palou's gap to the front sat at 3.4 seconds. With Lundgaard slowed as he navigated slower cars in front, Power's deficit dipped to just a half second. His stand-in strategist and full-time race engineer David Faustino gave Power a last-minute call into the pits on lap 39. In hopes of being able to find clean air on his outlap and eventually jump Lundgaard in the pit sequence. And folks, that's all we have time for. We're out of time. And this is Jake Hooper saying thanks for tuning in this half hour's worth of USA Today Sports Monday night edition, and I will talk to you next week.